Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hey, everybody. This is Tracy Brown from Stained Glass Spirit, and I am so honored to host this series, Intentionally Inclusive. And I don't know how you got here. I don't know how you found us, but I'm just really delighted that you have. If you have not been to stainedglassspirit.net, I encourage you to visit there a couple times a week. We usually add to the blog and post not only opinions, but also links to resources, books, other sites on the internet where you can be inspired and where you can get the information you need so that you can be intentionally inclusive in your spiritual community. But the series, Intentionally Inclusive, is a series of conversations with people who serve in a variety of roles in different spiritual communities. Most of the guests on the show are from New Thought spiritual communities, churches and centers related to unity, related to divine science or religious science, science of mind, but not all. So some of the guests represent other faith systems and other types of churches, and a few guests even are not related to churches at all, but have something important to share with us related to diversity and inclusion in spiritual communities. That's one of the places where I have a passion, that place where diversity and spirituality and inclusion intersect. And every one of my guests has some fabulous energy around that as well. So welcome. I'm so glad you joined us today. My guest today is Reverend Peggy Hostetler, and she's the senior minister of the Oak Brook Center for Spiritual Living in Ocala, Florida. One of the things that's so interesting about Peggy is that her first career was in the computer industry. But after graduating from Holmes Institute in Orlando in 1995, she founded, and that's my word, and I think you're going to correct me on that in a minute, but she has served at the Oak Brook Center for Spiritual Living for the past 18 years. In addition, she's been what's called a regional support coordinator, serving and providing guidance to churches and centers in a geographic area, and she's currently on the faculty of the Centers for Spiritual Living School of Spiritual Leadership. Making a conscious choice to create a diverse community at Oak Brook CSL has been a high priority for Reverend Peggy, and I met her maybe 5 years ago, and we had this most fascinating conversation about both the challenges and the opportunities of being a leader in a multicultural, multi-ethnic spiritual community. And so it's one of the joys of her ministry, and we get to talk more about that today. So welcome, Reverend Peggy. Should I be corrected about being the founder of Oak Brook Center for Spiritual Living?
Hi, Tracy. Yes, the center was in existence 10 years before I came on board. And at first I was an assistant minister, then co-minister, and have been senior minister since 2000.
Yay. Yeah, as the words were coming out of my mouth, I was thinking, no, I don't think that's actually true. And I made up the words. So if I would have paid attention. But yeah, my brain caught it. So I guess I am in listening mode. So tell me and share with our listeners, is there one thing that happened, or at what point did this passion for diversity as it relates to your ministry, like when did you know that was a passion, and did something specific happen?
I think that it was always in my intention. I was called to a community that was not diverse. It was mainly a center with older folks, Caucasian, mostly women. There was one African-American gentleman who had been active in communities that were not diverse, and he was comfortable and has been a member and friend of our center all these years. But at the beginning, he was the only person that showed any color at all to our congregation. And it was something that, even though we are here in North Central Florida, we were not reflecting the culture of Ocala in our center. And so I was very eager to set that intention to vision for diversity and to simply know that it would show up if we vision for it.
So talk a little bit about visioning, because a lot of our listeners are not necessarily steeped in the spiritual practices of Centers for Spiritual Living, or they may be relatively new to Science of Mind. And so when you talk about visioning for inclusivity and visioning about diversity, like translate that to someone who doesn't know necessarily what you mean about that.
Okay. Well, it goes back a ways to some writing by Florence Scovel Shinn in the early 1900s, I think, when she talked about the difference between visualization and visioning. And she talked about visualization is where you have an idea in your mind and you imagine it and maybe do some kind of graphic thing to bring it into mind, and you attract that using the law of attraction. A vision is something that's larger, perhaps, than anything you've ever seen before. And so what we're after is God's vision. And we ask some visioning questions. It was actually a spiritual technology that was developed by Michael Beckwith, and his center at Agape brought it forth in writing and in sending out assistant ministers to teach it at our conventions and our conferences. And yes, now in Centers for Spiritual Living, it's right at the core of anything that's new, anything that wants to happen. Visioning is at the very center of it, because we're after that larger vision that may be beyond anything that our finite thinking has thus far brought forth. So there were three things really at our center that I saw a need for. As the center was mine to serve as senior minister, one was we did not have a strong youth program. We did not have a strong music program, and we did not have diversity. So each of those three areas, we spent an intentional time monthly on each of those areas and actually asked the visioning questions. What is God's highest vision regarding this here at Oak Brook? And then sat in the silence and listened for that still small voice to come forth and share what that wisdom might bring.
That's a great snapshot, and absolutely visioning as a spiritual practice is one of the core spiritual practices throughout Science of Mind, throughout centers related to spiritual or affiliated with Centers for Spiritual Living. And I love that you used the process. So how did the process, what came out of visioning, I mean, obviously now you can look back and see how much has changed, but in the beginning you were visioning once a month on this, and can you remember when you knew, like, oh, this is the direction to go, or here we've been visioning this and it's starting to manifest into physical form? Like, kind of what were your, maybe not total milestones, but when you really began to see it turn into the way you all are as a center?
Well, I think what I would share is that, yes, we did begin to see a small movement. But as far as diversity would go, we would see someone show up. But then since they didn't see the diverse community, they oftentimes did not return. And we had a number of what I would consider false starts regarding diversity over those early years, but we didn't give up on it. You know, the intention was set, the seeds had been planted, and so what we actually ended up with was a gift in Paula Byfield, who came from Jamaica, and her life had brought her to our center, and with a daughter, and she became very much an intimate of everything going on at our center, and one of our leaders right off, and over the years became a minister in our movement, and she founded the Baltimore Center for Spiritual Living years later. So it came forth in individuals that had a stick-to-itiveness after a period of time. And I think for us to combine the combination of visioning, recognizing people when they showed up, honoring them, maybe even going beyond what we might with a newcomer to make them feel welcome, put them up front in front of the congregation in a leadership role as soon as that was appropriate, those kinds of things.
I love that. Those are some really practical tips or actions that people can take to encourage this, to encourage inclusivity, and to encourage there being visibility for everyone that this is who we are. And I've talked to quite a few people who have done this in lots of different ways, not limited to the discussion of diversity as it relates to race or color, skin color, but also as it relates to gender, as it relates to age, as it relates to other dimensions of diversity, other factors, other identity groups, so that people, as you said, people who come and visit or people who come and they're interested, but they feel they're so different from what appears to be the norm, and they're not sure there's a place for them.
Right. And yes, our diversity does include all of those things. We do have a strong youth and family ministry now with children of all ages and young adults, their parents and others that don't have children. We do have, we're very gender inclusive, and that's very visible at our center. And we don't, we celebrate that. We celebrate all the different ways that diversity and inclusivity can show up. And then we're also getting active in the larger community. There is a diversity task force at a city level in Ocala, and we're becoming active in that. We're members of the task force to bring forth a Diversity and Cultural Awareness Week once a year at Ocala in October. And so we're joining in that and also with interfaith activities. So all of those different ways that we can say that we really mean it when we want that inclusivity and diversity, we're attempting to approach it in every way that shows for us. And I can't help but believe that these have all come to us because of our visioning. As we get really clear that we're serious about bringing it forth, Spirit provides it. And we not only attract people that are diverse, we attract people that are pioneers willing to help us become more diverse.
Right, because there's some truth to the fact that everybody in the room could be the same race and gender, and you would still have diversity. That, you could have 100 people sitting in the seats and they could all be white and they could all be women, and you would still have diversity based on age or education or sexual orientation or, lots of different characteristics. So in that sense, it's not enough just to say diversity, but what you just said is so powerful, in my opinion, is you didn't just attract visible diversity, but you attracted the pioneers. You attracted the people who would help to shift the status quo and were willing to engage in that way.
Right. And so as senior minister, when someone would show up and I would see that, that they were perhaps modeling an area that we had not had a strength before, I invited them to be very visible in being a part of the community, because we wanted them to be examples of our teaching put into practice in this way. And I have been blessed in many, time and again with those very individuals who also are on course to bring diverse inclusivity into our world. And so that's an interesting component, which I hadn't really thought about before. that the very people that are a part of Oak Brook Center for Spiritual Living now are the very people that are advocates out there wanting to do more in the community, bring kindness and openness and inclusivity into our world, practice the golden rule more completely, and bring that in every area where they're interacting in their daily life, and then bring that back to our center and celebrate it together.
So think about, as you're beginning to make the transition and you're starting to have people from different ethnic groups and, you know, a different mix, either by age or ethnicity or gender, than what's, you know, existing in the 10 years before you were in a key leadership role. Can you think of one or two times when there was a lot of tension? It was, it was hard or uncomfortable. And I'm curious about that because so often people think, well, I'm committed to this, and so, yeah, it should just happen. And when they get pushed back or challenged, it's like, oh, I didn't know it was going to be so hard. So can you think of one or two examples where, yeah, it was a little hard, or there was tension, or people weren't happy? And what did you do to work through that?
I think, Tracy, the main thing is that it became a priority, and some other things that might have been priorities before, as, you know, just having the most people, the highest givers, you know, focusing on that component, I did have to let go of that because it became clear that there were those who wanted things to stay the way they were before.
Yes.
And had that been my priority of keeping everybody happy during that time, I don't believe we would have had the freedom to move forward in this area. There had to be a freedom. And again, I think this comes from visioning. I think as we ask what is God's highest vision concerning this, then there is perhaps a certainty of action that is an outcome. And we did not have disharmony about any of it throughout the time. People, one by one, did fall away if this wasn't what they were after in a center. And that had to be okay.
Yeah, I love that.
There was no holding on to things as they were before and trying to make it new. Those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has been, over this period of time, kind of a metamorphosis stage, you know, in the cocoon between the caterpillar and the butterfly. And to be comfortable with an unknown situation and just keep moving forward, I think, was the key. And I was blessed with leaders in our center that allowed that to not become a point of contention. If people left, they left quietly. New people came in that were open to the diversity. Those that come now, that's what they see in all the ways that you've described it. And obviously, if it isn't what they're looking for, they won't return. But if it is what they're looking for, and we celebrate it in so many ways, you know, talking about, well, as we let other people be who they are, then we get to be who we are more and get to be open about everything about ourselves if we're allowing everyone else to be open, then those that are ready to receive that gift are helping to build our center.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it made me think about, yeah, how often do we ask, what is God's highest vision for, you know, anything that we are wanting to experience and create, co-create in our lives? And then when that starts to happen, we go, oh, well, wait, I understand God's highest vision is inclusion, but it's too hard. Like, could you make it easier?
No. Or I really love that person and I don't want to lose them, you know?
Right.
And that's one thing, you know, having been in the ministry for 18 years, that people come and go in centers. Our center looks very different than it did when I first came on board in 1995. And that has to be okay. And ministers before me and ministers that have mentored me have told me about that. You know, the people mm-hmm. do leave and new people come and we can't hold on. We have to allow that freedom. You know, if you think about the freedoms in our country, the very most wonderful one is freedom of religion. And mm-hmm. so we pattern that, we model that at in our center and Centers for Spiritual Living, I think all New Thought centers do. We pattern that we celebrate that freedom of religion and that freedom to be authentic as to who we are as individuals. So, yeah, as you say, when everyone could be very much looking alike and yet they are diverse, we're still talking about individual expression.
Right, right, right. So what I'm picking up is that, yes, this has evolved from a commitment to visioning and visioning supported the commitment. It's kind of like on both sides of the coin. And visioning was a process that was used, and you started seeing that manifest in lots of different ways and through lots of different people. And as this was evolving, there was no major disharmony about it, that it evolved naturally. My guess is it didn't evolve as fast. Sometimes you had to have a little patience. But,
right. And yet once it gets started, there's a momentum. Yeah. So those early years, I knew that we were doing the visioning work, and if it wasn't showing up right away, there were some little frustrations that happened in those years. One individual does not make a majority overnight. And
right.
One individual doesn't necessarily quickly attract others that are like them. So, yes, patience is a key factor there. I guess I am patient in lots of ways regarding our spiritual community. It's still got a ways to go in lots of directions to be the community that I have really envisioned for it to become. But it's on its way in lots of ways, and this is one of them.
So I asked you before if there were one or two examples that, you know, were challenges or created tension, and I love that there was, you know, no big, huge blow-up or split. We didn't have the drama that sometimes people say, oh, we can't talk about diversity because it's going to be difficult, and, people just are so opinionated about it, because you linked it to the visioning and to the mission and to the message of the center versus we're really good and now because we haven't had this in the past, we've got to fix something. So you didn't have any major drama, but when I ask you this question, what one or two successes in the progress you've made so far, what one or two things really jump out at you as examples of successes?
I think one of the things I've just been celebrating lately is that our older individuals that we have attracted in recent years are excited about the diversity as much as the younger people.
Mm.
And that's really beautiful to see because I guess I, in my own mind, had a stereotype of Caucasian individuals, white people that are resistant, becoming a challenge, and again, as I shared before, if that was a challenge for them, they never confronted me or the center about it. They just quietly weren't a part of it anymore, and we did let that be okay. And then plus some of them have passed, you know, or have made the transition during these same years, and the ones that have come in those, the 70s and 80-year-olds, seem to be as diverse-oriented as all of the rest of us. I have family members that are gay children or interracial marriages and their families, and so they're really on board and helping us exemplify that with the younger people, which is really beautiful to see. And I like to think that we are an example in our community of that.
That's a great
I think probably
example.
Probably one of the things that excite me the most is that we do talk about this. You know, it isn't something that just is an undercurrent. we talk about celebrating diversity. When we welcome folks on a Sunday celebration, you know, we talk about how much we celebrate diversity and that you're welcome here and the different paths to God. And so right from the very beginning, when someone first comes to at least a Sunday celebration service, they're hearing that we're celebrating diversity. And if that's on their agenda to want to be a part of, they perhaps will recognize that. And if they've been questioning whether we really mean what we say, I think sometimes there are some faith communities that talk about how everyone is welcome, but then they get a sense that once they get there, someone wants to change them.
Mm-hmm.
They find out very clearly, both from what we do at the beginning of our celebration and then our Oak Brook song that we sing at the end, that we're not about changing anybody else, that we love them just the way they are and that the way they are is perfect. And so I think they get it right away that we're walking our talk in this area.
And that is so important because, you know, there are a dozen ways to say it. Many people, you know, heard their mothers or grandmothers saying action speaks louder than words. And Stephen Covey in the Seven Habits book talked about, it's not one of the seven habits, but he refers at one point to you can't talk your way out of what you behave yourself into. And, you know, and I love that we can say really pretty things. We can, you know, use the right language, but if when people show up, they don't feel it and see it happening, then the words actually not only have no meaning, they actually have negative meaning because it, you know, creates an experience that's so opposite to it that it ruins your credibility about everything else you talk about.
Right, right. And our community is not a large community, but if you were to come on a Sunday, you would see the diversity of our choir, our Joyful Noise choral group. You'd see the diversity of folks that are up front, all ages and ethnicities and gender preferences and so forth. It's all very visible. So, and that's our goal, you know, our goal. And then, of course, to be welcomed and to be heard and to be appreciated. I think those two things, to be appreciated and to be heard, are very important in building spiritual community, no matter what it is you're trying to do.
So how, and I'm guessing you found yourself in this conversation around the question I'm getting ready to ask you, but how do you respond, or how might you respond, when you're talking to one of your minister colleagues who says, you know, oh, we don't talk about diversity, all that political correctness stuff. You know, we are all one, and we believe in oneness in our spiritual tradition. So there's no reason, you know, talking about diversity as a distraction, and maybe they even go so far as to say, if you focus on the way we're different, you're focusing on duality. But even without going all the way to calling diversity duality, this idea that we're all one and we don't need to spend energy on the ways that we're different, how would you engage, or what things would be going on in your mind if you were in a conversation with a ministerial colleague?
Okay, I guess, and I haven't had that conversation lately. I can't think if I've ever had it with anyone. I think perhaps what I have seen is ministers that are white women like I am don't know how to get started with it. There is a concern of alienating the congregation that they already have as they move toward a diverse congregation. The oneness thing, I think, I have so ingrained in myself this idea of harmony. When my teenagers were, a son 2.5 years older than his sister, when they were teenagers and they wouldn't get along, I would sing a song that I had made up about harmony. And, mm-hmm. And so I think as I was teaching them in those years, I really taught myself. And so for me, I love oneness. We certainly teach it at our center in all our classes and in all my talks on Sunday. I end up at that subject, back to oneness, oneness with the divine and oneness with one another. But I think that as people come in and look around the room, perhaps the diversity being patterned is more than the words that share about it. And I guess I don't really have an answer for your question in the way that you're asking it. The ministers that talk about oneness and say they don't need to approach diversity, I just invite them to take a look at their congregation and see if it's diverse. And take a look at the area in which their center is located and see if the demographics of their city is diverse. And see if there might be something that they're missing, if their community is not reflecting the diversity of the larger community in which their center finds itself. And then to know the enrichment that comes from, you know, different cultures celebrating together, people of different colors, different gender choices, you know, whatever it might be, however life is showing up for the individuals, for each person to feel that they can express their authentic self in freedom. And I do believe at our center, there may be individuals that our center is the only place that they're really free to express their individuality without concern that someone will judge them. That's what our center is all about. And I had a conversation with a young person that was transgender just yesterday or the day before, and that was exactly the thing that he was saying, is that this is the first place he's ever been, that he feels that he can make a contribution and he will be heard, and that he knows he's home. And that was beautiful to hear, and he'd only been visiting us twice.
Oh, that's very sweet and very powerful. Wow. Yeah, I know that I've been in some conversations, way too many conversations around that. And on the one hand, it and sometimes it concerns me, and sometimes because, you know, I wonder about the interpretation from a theological perspective, and sometimes it makes me sad, and sometimes, and I guess most of the time, I feel really blessed that people will engage with me on the topic, because my guess is they won't say it necessarily that way to, you know, to everyone for the desire to not get into a big debate about it. I'm usually curious when people will say that, but I've had quite a few ministers and speak from that perspective, that if we believe in oneness, there is no diversity. But when we teach, what we teach is that each one of us has oneness with God, with Spirit, that there is no way to separate any one of us. And in that way, we all share that oneness with God, and so we are all connected. But we don't teach that oneness is sameness, that because we all share this oneness with Spirit, that each one of us is the same. And we know that from the, you know, unlimited nature of God, that there it's divine design that each one of us is created with some unique combination of physical characteristics, qualities, skills, and talents. And so how can I, you know, the way I think about it a lot is when I meet someone who's different from me in some significant way, I'm getting to see another face of God. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
How cool is that? I get to see, you know, God could not fit all the ways it could express into me, into one human experience. So when I meet someone who's significantly, you know, who's different in some way that I know or that I'm experiencing, I'm like, oh, okay, of course this person is different from me. It's a by design? What can I learn from them? What can I explore? How can I see another slice of life from their perspective?
And don't you think, too, Tracy, that that brings forth then that if there have been aspects of ourselves that we've not honored or not allowed to come forth yet, that as we interact with others that are different, then there may be new talents or something that we had pushed down in our youth that really wants to express, and the fact that we're honoring diversity with another individual, we're also saying somewhere in our psyche, oh, please come forth and play with me.
Yeah.
Because there is that aspect to it as well, you know, that as we open to all the diverse ways that God expresses as individuals in nature, certainly all the trees are different from one another, there's something in us that maybe wants to come forth now, but if we think, well, this is the way it is and it can't be different from this, then that part of us is yet to be expressed. Perhaps a creative aspect of ourselves that really wants to shine now. And as we see that diversity in others come forth, then we welcome that diversity within ourselves. It may be shining for the very first time, no matter what age we might be.
You mean we are always evolving and growing, that we really don't have to stop at a certain age?
Right. All of this is the multiplicity along with the unity. Isn't it beautiful to think of? And to encourage that in one another, in children and those that we interact with at our centers, you know, to be encouragers of that full expression of ourselves and the gifts that we have to share, to not hold back.
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes. So you mentioned that there are some things you intentionally do as a part of your Sunday celebration, your worship service. You mentioned a couple of things. So if there are other things you want to add, I'd love to hear those. And where I was going to go is that, are there specific things that you do?
I think as we get more clear as to new ways that we want to be diverse, we have a Hispanic population in Ocala, Florida, and we've not engaged Spanish speaking in our center. We have some folks that are bilingual, of course, and they are welcome, but we haven't done anything yet to really honor people that speak other languages as a part of our Sunday celebration. So that's in the back of my mind, to maybe not do every Sunday, but perhaps to find ways to exemplify that inclusivity in whatever ways it might be, allowing our teenagers to get up front more often on a Sunday. Whenever we have a fifth Sunday, they take over the whole service now. We have a wonderful leadership team for our young people, and I just step back and watch them do everything. And they do bring people that hadn't been to our center before. They're getting so professional, excuse me, at being up front, doing their skits and their songs. For us to actually get out front with different new ways that we would like to be inclusive.
Those are great examples. And they reflect some of what you referred to earlier, that having people present is important and having the visibility is also important. So you have the idea that is, the idea of God about what it looks like, but then to evidence it, you actually do have to have people doing certain things or include things in print or in your service. Do you do anything at all specifically related to preparing laity and or team leaders for, like, your volunteer teams, your ministry teams? Do you do anything that helps the participants get along? I mean, I hate to use that line. I don't use it very often, you know, that, well, can we all just get along? But it seems like when there is a lot of diversity, in the long term, it's fabulous, but sometimes in the short term, people aren't comfortable with one another.
I guess that as people come into service in different ways, whether they're in the choir or the welcome team or the leadership council or the youth department, I think for them to get to know each other outside of just the service time. Of course, a choir works together more than just performing, so they've built their own community within our community, and it's very diverse. And the same is true with our welcome team, you know, that they meet quarterly and have a potluck just among themselves. And the youth leadership team also does the same. So they're building service groups within the center where they get to know each other, you know, at a deep level. And those are all diverse groups. And so there's an opportunity for them to work things out when they come up, as they come up, and also to celebrate just being together and having our teaching and our spiritual community in common among them.
And it is always important to have some common ground. So you're right. Everyone has the spiritual teaching as a common ground, and the commitment, overall commitment to the community as a common ground to bring us together. And then you become a little bit of a family within the family. And I wasn't really looking for anything specific. I was just curious if there were specific things. I know a couple of communities that have begun to think about how to. And I don't want to use the word train people, because it's not so much that, but ensure that there's sensitivity and awareness that, you know, everybody's not going to think like you, and you're the team leader, and it's up to you to create an environment for everyone, regardless of their background, their culture, their age, to find a way to contribute, because they're volunteering. And some centers have had some churches have had challenges with that, because it's kind of like, well, this is how I am, and I'm the team leader. And so, that team leader begins to attract the people who are their friends or the people who, you know, just really resonate with them. And then others who could make a valuable contribution just kind of like, I don't fit in. So I'll go find someplace else to volunteer. They don't leave the community, you know, but they're not where their first choice for service would be.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, one of the keys here is as we can find ways to honor each individual in the way that they serve and celebrate just volunteering, celebrate service. And to let them know that we're grateful for the service they provide. I think perhaps as we first were beginning to become more diverse, we did have some of the things you're describing, and now the momentum is such that as people come along and come to our center and take part in activities or in service areas, they know that that's the culture, and that's that expectation. And it's what they want. It's why they're there. So I guess what I'm hearing myself say is not only do they have the teaching in common and their dedication to the center, they also have a mindset that's pro-inclusive in their own way of thinking. And those are the people we're attracting now.
I love
that's
it.
That's an interesting thing, which I hadn't really thought of before, because it's become so little of a controversy in any way. I think those are the people that now that we've gotten this far along the road with this, that very early on they realize, and we don't hide from it. You know, again, we have it on our our program cover about diversity. We say it in our greeting, our Oak Brook song that we sing every other week. We sing the peace song on the opposite week. But in the other week that we sing, it actually speaks of honoring everyone and not trying to change anybody, those kinds of things. And then they get to see it patterned. And they see the diversity around as the song is sung. And then as they interact with one another in our different events, they see that we do walk our talk in this area. So I would encourage people to know that once they get going with this, there will be a momentum that will help to not only make it easier, but will expand on it, and it just gets richer and richer.
So you've referred to our Oak Brook song a couple of times.
Yeah.
And so I don't necessarily want you to, I mean, you've given some examples of some of the lyrics. That's great for what we're doing right in this moment. But I just don't want to forget to tell you, I would love to see a copy of the lyrics or hear the song if you have a recording of it.
Okay. Yes, Tracy, I'll send it to you. Yes.
So that's what, you know, people are listening in on our candid conversation. It's like, I want a copy of it. And actually, if you have audio or video of it being sung, I'll post it to the Stained Glass Spirit blog.
Oh, fun. It was written by a couple who are gay. And she's from Jamaica. One's from Jamaica. One's from Ocala. They're African American, and they exemplify diversity. And they wrote the song for us to sing, and we, you know, hold hands in a circle and all sing the song. And I could think of some of it. I might not think of it all, but if you'd like to hear me try, I would give it a go.
No, just send it to me.
Okay. I'm definitely not going to try to sing it a cappella at this point, but yeah. I do have, we do record it every week. We stream, and so I'm sure we can pull it off, yes.
Yeah, that would be great. It's just so interesting. And you know, I feel really blessed that I get to talk to people from all, you know, kinds of centers, all sizes. And so this is fascinating for me. One of the things that I talk about a lot is when you are evaluating your inclusion worship factor, you know, we talk about the music and the message and, you know, how people are made to feel, you know, as members of the service, as you know, participating in the service. And I don't think I have talked to anyone in the last 5 years who will say that they had a song written for them specifically about diversity that's, you know, a part of their song, so a part of their service.
Mm-hmm.
So you've absolutely piqued my curiosity, and I would love to celebrate with you, but I have to hear the song.
Thank you. Yes, I'm sure that Norma and Donna would be happy to share it with you, Tracy.
I love it.
Yeah, I will give you permission. Yeah.
So we've reached out about 7 minutes, 6 or 7 minutes, and actually I have 2 or 3 things that are kind of in my head to ask you about, but I want to stop before I do that and ask you, we've talked about a variety of things. Is there something related to diversity and inclusion and helping someone be an intentionally inclusive leader that you just want to share? And I haven't asked you the right question yet.
Well, I know that diversity is now a part of our ministerial training, and I'm excited about that. And I will be facilitating that at the Florida campus next winter term for our students. So I'm excited that it's becoming a part of the curriculum for our ministers as they come on board. The diversity stands alone as a subject for them to get geared up on as part of their requirements. So that's fun and exciting. And I guess the only thing I would just say is I would encourage everyone that feels that their community is not diverse enough yet to just set that intention and do some visioning around it, because it is so enriching and it's fun, and it's enlivening, the more diverse our communities become. And I would just encourage everyone, no matter where they are, if it can be done in the rural parts of Florida, it can be done anywhere.
I love that. And I, too, agree with you. I'm very excited that in Centers for Spiritual Living, everyone who goes through the ministerial training beginning this fall is required, that there is a there will be a mandatory 20-hour class mm-hmm. on diversity for ministers, diversity, you know, as a leader in a spiritual community. This is a part of your toolkit to understand more about how to be inclusive and to lead the community in that way. So it's a big thing.
And it just blesses our lives as spiritual leaders to set that intention and go for it, because I think it takes us to a level of not just, if it shows up, it's okay, but actually setting the intention to be more diverse and finding ways to express that and to honor that diversity among those that we have. And again, I really feel it has something to do personally with my honoring aspects of myself as I honor diversity in all people. So I get to play in new ways.
Yeah, and to have that come, it's not you're broke, something's broken and you need to fix it, or you should feel guilty, but to really have it come from a commitment to grow and to serve in a way that is authentic, and to allow more people to get the message, not just in the language, not just in the books, but in the way we practice our spiritual beliefs. It's just, it's very powerful. And there are not a lot of seminaries or ministerial training programs that have made this kind of commitment.
And it's so in alignment with our teaching. It is so in alignment with our teaching, because as we speak of oneness, as we speak of celebrating unique, authentic living, to be showing that forth shows that our centers and our teaching is for everyone.
Yes, and if we truly believe that, then let's create worship services and classes and volunteer opportunities and community outreach and let's create something that actually reflects what we believe is true. So I love it. I absolutely love it that we're moving in that direction. Obviously, we made the decision several years ago so that the curriculum could be developed and the shift occur and be communicated. So you'll
also
be
I'll be teaching it in Florida and I'll be teaching it in Denver
at the Mile High campus.
And when do you teach it, Tracy? In the fall term or winter?
In the winter term.
I think
it's on the schedule for January, I think. Uh-huh. January or February. So we'll have to talk again and compare notes and talk about in preparing for it, and then as it happens, all of the conversation that occurred.
Right. Yes, that will be fun. I look forward to it.
But I don't need that excuse to connect with you. I'm so glad that you said yes to sharing with me today on Intentionally Inclusive. You're one of the people who, you know, as I've talked to people around the country, you have a story to tell and an example to share that I know will inspire many people who listen to the recording and who, you know, are wanting to do what you've already done. So I really appreciate you being willing to do that.
Thank you, Tracy. It's been a privilege. And I've enjoyed our conversation a lot. And it's given me some insight as to the unfoldment of this at our center. I hadn't really sat back and taken a survey of all these years and how it has unfolded. So this is a real gift to me.
Yeah, isn't that great to be like, I'm so much in it. It's like, you know, the the cliche of you can't see the forest for the trees when you're in the forest.
Right.
And you've been living it, and yeah, you can see now the impact of starting from visioning and then how
right.
it unfolds.
Right, yes. Yeah, it's a great gift. We have so many wonderful spiritual tools.
So thanks, everybody, for listening in to Intentionally Inclusive. And I just want to remind you that the entire library of conversations is available for you to listen to. And I encourage you to join me live on Monday afternoons through November of 2014 as we're recording these sessions with a lot of different people with a lot of different perspectives. So check the schedule for what's coming up next. And if you have a suggestion of someone or questions that you would like to be asked, then I'm open to hearing that as well. You can find more information by going to stainedglassspirit.net. And then clicking on the Intentionally Inclusive page. Also, in a few days, you will be able to click on the Intentionally Inclusive Masterclass series, and we're going to start making those self-study classes available for you on things like evaluating your own diversity welcome factor and your own inclusion worship factor. So I hope you'll find a lot of value in that. But that's all the time we have for this week's session of Intentionally Inclusive. Thanks for joining in. I'm Tracy Brown from StainedGlassSpirit.net, and we'll talk again soon. Bye for now.